David Brown, back to Crosby, Stills, Nash, and Young. I guess, you know, this had a disaster written on it from the beginning. As soon as, I mean, you make the point that Neil Young joined the band with every intention of using them as a springboard for his individual career. Is that right?
Well, in ways, yeah. I mean, it was, again, we kind of forget Neil is such a legend now that he was kind of coming off of, you know, when he joined them, which was the summer of 69, he was coming off a record simply called Neil Young, was his first solo album after Springfield, that was pretty much a flop. I mean, it's kind of a great record, you know. In retrospect, it's got songs like I've Been Waiting for You and so forth on it, but it was not successful, whereas Crosby, Stills, and Nash was this huge record. So he was in a strange place. He had also put out Everybody Knows This Is Nowhere with Crazy Horse, and that had done well, but you know, he was not the kind of household name that they had suddenly become. So it actually helped him quite a bit to get by joining Crosby, Stills, and Nash to get his name out there. At the same time, he also joined them for musical reasons. I mean, he always enjoyed playing guitar with Stephen Stills. To this day, you know, they're back together again this summer. They've reconvened with their old band Buffalo Springfield, and even though they've had their ups and downs and they've been on and off over the years and all kinds of squabbles, but you know they ultimately, you know, really kind of still get off on each other as guitar players, and I think that drew him to join Crosby, Stills, and Nash as well that year.
You know, I saw Crosby, Stills, Nash within the last 7-8 months ago here in Las Vegas. They were not good. I mean, you know, it was wonderful. The memories, the songs are still great, but you know that was. It's time has taken its toll on these guys. So when you tell me that Stephen Stills and Neil Young are going out with Buffalo Springfield, I'm kind of jazzed. I hadn't heard that before.
Yeah, and the early reports have been really good. There are even some clips on YouTube of the first time they reconvened this group a few months ago at a show outside of San Francisco. And doing all those old Springfield songs that, you know, some of which they almost, like, they never performed live because the group broke up so early. So it's kind of a cool thing, actually.
Yeah, you make the point that Stephen Stills was such an incredible talent in so many ways. He took control of things. He could do so many things musically that he would just pick up a lot of the slack for the band. He'd do it on his own. He'd remix mm-hmm. recordings late at night when everybody else was gone. And he performed so many jobs that on one hand it was great to have somebody who could do so much, but on the other it led to trouble with the other members.
It did, especially when Neil joined the band, because, you know, Stephen pretty much ran the show on the first Crosby, Stills, and Nash record and played, like, almost all the instruments except the drums and some other guitar. But, you know, he was the captain of that ship, for sure. And they start making the second record, Deja Vu. There are these huge expectations. They're now a supergroup. And, you know, and now you have Neil Young in the studio with them. And it caused problems kind of right away because suddenly Stephen wasn't, you know, in control, and Neil is very headstrong as well. He had two, you know, headstrong guys, and you know, they there was a lot of pressure on them at that point. You know, you got to follow up a huge record. You have a new guy in the band, and there was the one I was talking with the recording engineer Bill Halverson about the record, they all have very mixed memories of making Deja Vu, even though it's such a, you would never hear it in the group, right? It's such a kind of beautiful, mellow record, but there were all kinds of tensions, and Graham Nash at one point broke down and sort of, you know, in the studio and was crying, and, like, you know, because there was so much arguing going on, and Bill Halverson, their engineer, just told me that, like, this is an example of the craziness that went on in the studio. That very last piano note that we hear on Our House, they had to go to, they couldn't find the right sound. They had to go to all these different recording studios, ended up in Los Angeles, to find the piano, just that right note. At the end, they were such perfectionists about it, but sort of driving each other crazy at the same time.
Well, you throw in drugs. Now, of course, you know, yeah, it's rock and roll, sex, drugs, rock and roll. They really took the drug part seriously, or at least according to some of your information, is that you said in the book that the drugs were never in short supply. They jokingly dubbed themselves the Frozen Noses, And there's a quote from Graham Nash where he says, by the time we got to Deja Vu, we'd snorted 80 pounds of cocaine. That might be an exaggeration, but maybe not by much.
He said that somewhat jokingly, but it's a slight exaggeration. Yeah, but that was a period when that drug was around and increasing in usage throughout 1970, and there were more cocaine busts than ever that year. But it wasn't seen at that point as this horrible addictive thing. It was just seen as this drug that could, much like psychedelics, increase your creativity and keep you up all night if you needed a little boost. Those are the days when there was no such thing as a Just Say No campaign, and it was just, drugs like that were just seen as opening the gateways to creativity, and they were happy to explore those possibilities in every way.